Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Stuff over here, stuff over there. You have stuff everywhere. No, that is not a Dr. Seuss rhyme. It's what you see when you walk into your home. The clutter, the crowding in your kitchen, your living room, your dining room, yes, the bedroom, and more. Do you feel like you can't even breathe? Well, tonight we have help for you to help you get that stuff out of your house, to declutter. My guests are professional organizer Jillian Carty-Roper and Tanisha Lyons-Porter, owner of Natural Born Organizers. If you are still trying to figure out how to get all of that stuff out of your house, but you don't know where to start, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Jillian, Tanisha, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you for inviting me again.
Yes, I've started already. So let me, Tanisha, start with you. What is the psychology behind decluttering? Why is it so difficult for people to do it?
You know, it is because every single thing in our home, in our office, is attached to a person, a memory, an experience, a goal, a failure, a dream, an aspiration. And so we equate each one of those things with each one of those experiences to the actual thing. And so that becomes a barrier for us to let it go. And so for different reasons, whether it's a person, we want to feel closer to that person, whether they passed away or was a bad breakup, whether if it was a goal, if we sometimes subconsciously, we feel like if we let go of something, that means that we failed. There's so many things, but that is what I have realized, is that each and everything in our homes and in our office is attached to something that is emotional, that affects our psyche. So we have to get to the root of that in order to make it easier to let go of things when it no longer serves us.
Does that whole scenario, that theory, sit right with you, Jillian? It sounds right to me.
I would agree 100%. The only thing that I would add to what Tanisha said is that I know sometimes for folks that I've worked with, one of the struggles they have with letting go stuff is that for some people, they have had a history of a lot of losses in their lives. And so things really represent a person, an experience, as Tanisha said. The other is that some folks would like to be able to let go of some things, but time and the pressures of their current life sometimes get in the way of being able to do so.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I understand the difficulty with letting go of things that have sentimental value. They could be photographs, or perhaps they could be, awards or something like that. Even a paperweight that your kid gave to you when they were in elementary school, and now your child is grown and gone. has his or her own house and family and all of that. But what about the junk? Jillian, can you define the junk that has no sentimental value, but people just seem not to be able to get rid of the junk?
So I would say that, first of all, junk is what might be junk to you and maybe junk to me may not be junk to somebody else. I'd like to add that sometimes for folks, it's being able to actually, as I said before, find the time to be able to actually address some of the things that are in the way that don't have any sentimental value, to which they're not necessarily attached. Decluttering, downsizing, organizing is really not a destination. It's a process. And it's not something that you're able to kind of do once and say, oh, I'm all done and everything is going to stay the way it is. It's something that you have to do at different points in your life, at different points in the week, at different points in the month. And so I think that's a lot of times, it's, in my experience working with clients, it's actually sometimes not having the time. The other thing is that we take for granted, I think sometimes if you are by nature are very organized, that everybody has that skill set. They really do know how to look at something and make decisions about what really might actually be not useful. Is something that you're going to toss? What is something that you, you know, it might be something that you have some value, but not necessarily to you. It may be a donate. And then finally get into the things that really support your functioning and your daily life as if they're keeps. So making assumptions that that people actually have that ability to sort of follow those steps and to get to the place where they're able to let go of things that are not incredibly sentimental, like photos or gifts or cards, is I think something to be considered.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about decluttering your home, getting rid of the stuff that you've been holding on to for a really long time that you really don't need. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kevin, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Kevin. What's on your mind?
Hey, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing just fine. My mind is not cluttered at all.
Okay, well, I'm a minimalist, so I try to keep things pretty plain and simple, but I'm going to drop the bombshell of my starter conversation. How do I get my wife on board with chaos stuff? Because right now, what I try to do is I'll keep something I really don't need, and I kind of keep it around in a way near something else that other things that she may have that we know we need to get rid of. And then when she gets tired of my stuff, I say, well, okay, let's get rid of it. Well, how about this thing right here, too? But I don't know how long that's what she's working. So what else can I do to try to get her more encouraged to try to clear out some things that we no longer need or use or what may it be?
Well, I have a quick question for you, Kevin. Is the sofa in your living room cluttered?
No, the living room is not cluttered.
Because that's probably where you're going to be sleeping tonight once your wife hears that you... Tanisha, can we help Kevin real quick?
Yes, Kevin. So, you know, I'm sure Jillian hears this all of the time with her clients as well. And when we are working with clients who think differently about the items in their home, I know for me, I always encourage the client that it's easier for them to, you know, purge things, identify what no longer belongs, you know, go ahead and donate or trash or recycle. I try and encourage that person to control what they can control. Control their areas, right? Do a little bit in the common areas, but really try and minimize to your comfort your area that you can control, because 9 times out of 10, the other person will watch that, will see that, and then will be inspired to maybe handle more of their areas, right? Because when one person's area is, you know, when I like to say the storage space to stuff ratio is intact, it really tends to highlight the other person's area, right? But what tends to happen is, you know, one, I don't want to say the neater partner, because that sometimes isn't always the case. But the partner who can purge things on a regular basis and can identify those things easier, they will, in order not to cause conflict, in order not to be on the couch, they won't, you know, they'll kind of give in, right? And they won't do certain things around the house. But I think that's counterproductive, because then the other partner can hide and can find refuge within those things. So I find it better to encourage and motivate by controlling your area, and then in even some areas in the common spaces, and that tends to work a lot better.
Kevin, good luck to you. Stay off the sofa. And hopefully you all can come to a meeting of the mind. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about decluttering your home and organizing it. Jillian, where would you recommend that someone who wants to get rid of the clutter start?
I encourage folks that I work with, before we even get started, to do what I would call a very simple assessment to decide where to start. And the guidance that I would usually give is that where will you get the most benefit in terms of function and appearance? I encourage them to choose a beginning point that is manageable, so a space or a project where they could feel successful. So I oftentimes would, even if people may suggest that this is where they want to start, unless there are implications with regard to having a home office that's connected to a business, paper is usually not the place I would encourage somebody to start in terms of decluttering, because it's time consuming. You really have to look and pay attention. And so in order to feel a success, and success drives motivation, I usually encourage people to think about starting with something that where they feel successful. In addition, I may ask you to think about sort of where are the common areas that you spend your most of your time. So bedrooms, closets, kitchens, home offices, your foyer, the entryway, where you would actually see the change that is made, and that would serve to provide motivation to, you know, to keep going and to address other areas. So I really think that doing sort of a simple assessment in terms of function and appearance, because you want it to function well and support your day-to-day living, but you also want to look it to look attractive and to start someplace where we can have a success. So a sort of circumscribed project. You know, we're not going to organize the entire closet or the entire bedroom at the first go, but we're going to start someplace where it's going to make a difference in your day-to-day living.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about decluttering your home. Denise calling from Fairfax, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. I'm a teacher, and I'm actually moving abroad later on this year. And so, if you can imagine, I have to get rid of a lot of stuff. Is the process of decluttering when you're moving different than if you're just decluttering and you're staying where you are?
Tanisha, you want to try that one?
It's actually the same. It's very similar. The end goal, a little bit different, which will affect like the strategy and the process. But since you're moving abroad, then it would be, you know, you really don't want to pay for packing and shipping items that you really don't foresee yourself using in your new life, right? You know, when you're moving locally or just decluttering and staying in one place, you tend to be okay with keeping items just in case, right? You know, I might need this. It could be useful, knowing that you haven't looked at it or thought of it, you know, in a couple of decades. But because you've gone through the process and you see it, you're like, oh, well, I could use this for something. So in that sense, when you're moving abroad or decluttering to move, you really don't want to pack and pay for labor and shipping for an item that is just in case. It's just really not worth it. So that I would recommend to be your underlying decision maker when you are looking at things that you're like, you know, that are on the fence. It's like, do I need this? Can I repurchase this when I get where I'm going at a reasonable cost, you know, a low cost and fairly easy? So that would be the biggest difference when you're decluttering to move abroad or move versus when you're staying at home.
Hmm. Denise, good luck to you and safe travels in your move. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about decluttering your home, getting rid of the stuff that's been hanging around, sitting around, impeding your travels through your home. How do you do that? And once you get rid of your stuff, how do you organize it? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on our website, whur.com. You can also download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone, and you can hear the program live. If you're on the phone, stay with us. Elaine, we're going to talk to you next. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are trying to get you to get some of that junk, some of that stuff, those things out of your house that you really don't need. How to declutter your home. My guests are professional organizer Jillian Carty-Roper and Tanisha Lyons-Porter, owner of Natural Born Organizers. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, Jillian, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a minimalist, but I do not like clutter. I can't stand stuff. And when, you know, for example, I don't like stuff on the dining room table other than a decorative dish and maybe some flowers. I don't like stuff on the coffee table in the living room. I don't like it just really drives me crazy. You can call me anal retentive if you want to, but you won't get an invitation to my house if you think I am. So are some people, Jillian, just junky?
I'm one who kind of tries to stay away from using labels. good one.
Tanisha, are people just junky?
I'm on the side with Jillian. You labels can be dangerous, and labels can keep people stuck. So,
yes. Okay, so what
continue,
would
ma'am.
So what would you what would you call it? What's the politically correct term?
There are folks who tend to hold on to more things than others. There are folks who tend to be more sentimental and see value in things that you and I may be, you know, not so sure how they see that. And so, you know, I'm going to say being organized and decluttering is not a one-size-fit-all.
Mm-hmm.
What may work for you and what may work for me, because I tend to be more of a person. I like simplicity, and I do like things to look cozy and homey, but I also don't like to see lots of things everywhere. In working for the last 12 years or so as an organizer, I come across people that span the gamut and see things in ways that they help me to broaden my own horizons. People who tend to be artistic, they're crafty. They don't see clutter as you and I. What you might discern as being clutter, they may see as potential things that will turn into projects or artwork. And so I stay away from labels. I really try to sort of look at what it is the person is doing and where they are and what really makes sense for them.
Pardon me for interrupting, but I'm not talking about the artsy fartsy folks. I love those folks. I mean, we've had people on this program. One lady, that's her social media handle, artsy fartsy. I'm all for that. I'm talking about when you walk into someone's house and there's a path that, that leads from the living room into the dining room because, 12 inches on one side of 12, they just have stuff. And where you can't sit down.
So I'm going to say that we do have folks who have a diagnosable condition. Mm-hmm. It's DSM-5 hoarding disorder. And, of course, that diagnosis would be made by somebody who has a mental health background. So there are folks who have that particular concern. So it's more than, and it's a brain-based disorder. It's not because they are, they're lazy or they're sloppy or they're untidy. It's really that their brains work in a different way. They perceive their environments in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
What looks like clutter to you and me does not necessarily, they don't experience it the same way.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Mm-hmm. Let me go through the phone lines again. Let's talk to Elaine calling from D.C. Elaine, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, everybody. How are you?
Just fine.
Hi.
Good. One thing I can say, I can agree with you ladies with what you're saying, okay? Because I've been there, okay? and the thing is, when people want to get rid of some of these sentimental things or throw them away, when we want to do it, we still see something that we want to say. And the sad part of it is that when, like the young lady was saying when she was moving,
mm-hmm.
Move. Don't take all the other stuff that you're not going to need. Take what you need. You're moving across the water. Go for it, And left it clean. That's how I'm looking at it.
Mm.
Left it clean up behind, And another thing, when you clean your house and you're trying to get rid of stuff, if you're in a two-floor or three-floor, start from the top. So everything that you bring it down will go out the door. Because once your house is cluttered, your mind is cluttered.
Mm.
You can't really do things that need to be done, not only things that have to be done in the house. You still have other things that have to be done and that they're cluttering up.
Yeah.
They're cluttering up your mind because your house is cluttered.
Okay.
So all of that has to be cleaned out.
Okay.
So I learned start from the top floor and work my way down. And everything I ain't using, everything I don't need, is going out with me.
Okay.
Right out the door.
Elaine, thank you so much. What do you think about what Elaine is saying, Tanisha?
Yeah, I think that's a great, especially working on a three-story place. Yes, definitely work your way down because unless you really need those steps in your life, going up and down is going to add to the process. But no, she's right. It's, a cluttered place leads to a cluttered mind, but then also vice versa, and Jillian can also, a cluttered mind can also lead to a cluttered space. So it works both ways. But absolutely, absolutely, in addition to, Jillian touched on it, there's chronic disorganization and then there's also situational disorganization.
What's the difference?
Chronic is, like a lower level on the hoarding scale, right? Mm-hmm. This is a chronic condition. This is,
you know, like Jillian said, it's not that they're lazy. It's not that, you know, they weren't taught or anything like that. Situational disorganization is an event may have happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you grew up and you were always pretty organized and you were a neat child and all of the things, but, you know, and maybe you went through life sharing, only having to not having to share your room. You went through college living by yourself, and then now you got married or you had a child. We hear all the time, I was so organized until I got married or until I had these kids, because now you have other people's things now that you have to attend with and manage and function, and it's more things. And so sometimes it's the methods that we used all of our lives to manage and have a lifestyle of decluttering and purging for ourselves does not adjust to either having children or other people in the house that do not think like us, which is probably the majority of the time, then things can tend to start to build up because it's not just you. And so that's where your systems have to become practical for the people who are using and living in the space. And when one person is on one side of the extreme, that's when you have to start creating adaptive, practical systems to work for everyone so that, you know, we can alleviate so much conflict around the stuff.
Go ahead, Jillian. Go ahead.
I was going to say I agree 100%. In addition to, you know, a life change could be somebody got ill. You know, so they're no longer able, they don't have the physical capacity to keep up with their stuff like they used to before. So that is also a real consideration that, you know, it might be a developmental change. You went from being a college student and now you are no longer in the dorm. You just moved into your own apartment. There's very little structure in terms of you know, routines, and now you really have to manage on your own.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, Jillian, what are some of the easiest things to get rid of? I would think as your children, if you have children, for example, as they get older, toys, but that's low hanging fruit. But for adults, what do you think are the easiest things to get rid of?
Well, in my experience, I believe that, you know, the category of things that tends to be easiest are the things that you can actually touch and see. And so, for example, things like clothing, shoes, pocketbooks, hats, those tend to be the things that people can take a look at. You can actually try something on and realize, oh, my God, this really doesn't suit me anymore. It doesn't fit. It looks awful. So those become easier decisions. Or, you know, you have very bad memories of this really nice-looking pair of shoes that, you know, that you wore maybe for maybe 30 minutes of the event, and then they were torturous for the rest of the evening. So those type of things, I think, are easier to get rid of, things to which people don't have that. The hardest things for people to let go of are things that have a fair amount of emotional and sentimental attachment. I think those tend to be some of the more difficult things. And unless you have sort of, I mean, I've worked with clients, you know, I have clients who like shoes, who like pocketbooks, but even when you go through some of, they can say, well, you know, I really don't like this one this much. I didn't use it as often. It doesn't hold all the things that I needed to. And those are some of the things where you can really get some momentum and movement going.
What should I do with my books? I was thinking about it. I was up in my attic last week, and I have several boxes of books that have served me well over the years, particularly as it relates to this job. But they've been up there for a while. I don't have space for them. They don't really hold any sentimental value, but they're just such good pieces of information. But I was just thinking, it's time for me to get rid of those rascals. What should I do?
I would find a charity that you can donate those books. So I know locally there's a couple of charities that literally just pick up books. And so that would be my first recommendation is find an organization that you can donate books to. I know a lot of libraries before the pandemic would accept book donations. You have to check with your local library, but those are my first two recommendations for people who have a outdated library that they no longer either need or have space for at home or in their office.
Okay. T-shirts, Jillian, should I just put them in a bag and throw them away?
If they're in good condition and somebody else could use them, the answer is no. Those are very donatable. You know, a lot of thrift stores, there's one in particular that I use that's in Silver Spring. They take your stuff and they will sell them for a much reduced fee. And they provide somebody with an opportunity to wear something nicer than they may have been able to purchase for themselves new. So I would say T-shirts, if they have sentimental value. I have had clients who have taken T-shirts and made quilts out of them. I've had clients mm-hmm. who have taken T-shirts and taken photographs of the T-shirts. So they keep the memory, but they don't mm-hmm. actually keep the actual item. And I have an organizer colleague who often will encourage clients to give away things by saying, you know, give it to the universe. There's somebody mm-hmm. out there for whom that will become a treasure. It won't be in the back of a closet or in a bin. They will actually put it on and wear it and use it.
That quilt idea sounds like a great idea, but then where am I going to put the quilt? So I want.
Quilt may not be for you.
Yeah, obviously not. So let us assume that we have been able to remove copious amounts of stuff. But now it's time to organize. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people who are listening and they have these huge, you know, walk-in closets because they live in houses that are probably less than, you know, 10 years old. Or even in apartment buildings that are newer buildings, they have these cavernous walk-in closets, and I'm so jealous of that. But I live in a house that's 85 years old. My closets are small.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know, Tanisha, how do I organize that stuff? Because literally, I mean, my closets are... they're teeny tiny.
Yeah. You really have to let your storage space, so like your closet, but really anything, your closet, your hall closet, the kitchen pantry, the cabinets, the bathroom cabinets under the sink, you have to allow that to be your boundary. You know, when we learned how to color as kids, we had the picture with big, thick lines, and we learned to stay within the line. What tends to happen and when clutter abounds, right, is when we have this size of a closet and then we figure out ways to store things outside of the boundaries of the closet, right? And then we have overflow and excess. So the number one thing is you just have to respect the space that you have. Right now, there are ways that even in a small closet, you can maximize whatever space you have. So on the floor, you know, if you have a shelf above the closet rods, you know, there may be an opportunity to add additional shelves or to add a product that you can stack so that you can utilize from the shelf to the ceiling. You know, there's ways that, you know, us as professional organizers can maximize whatever space you have and play Tetris with it. But the biggest thing, you know, the biggest thing is just making sure that whatever you decide you're going to keep in the closet, you love. Like, you should love everything in your closet. You should be able to shop your closet. And most of the time, we love like 20% of what's in our closet, mm-hmm. and we wear that 20% 80% of the time. So most of us, no matter how vast or how tiny our closet is, we should be able to, it should be able to house our favorites if mm-hmm. we just have our favorites in there. So that was kind of a nuanced, it depends answer, but hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, I mean, I've considered doing, you know, those, the whole California closet things, but mm-hmm. those, it's really expensive. And
it can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be. And mm-hmm. and short of taking my daughter's room and turning it into a closet, even though she, you know, no longer lives with me, you know, anymore, I'm sure that when she comes to visit and goes to her room and sees that her room is turned into a closet, you know, she would, you know, she would give me the side eye.
So, she'll feel some type of way about that.
Yeah, she, yeah, and I know what kind of way it is. So, but I do understand what you mean about the situational thing, because, you know, in handling, you know, my parents' estate and what have you, my office is now cluttered with their stuff. And the mm-hmm. the solution that I really have for dealing with that clutter is I just close the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. until I can get to a point where I can clean that stuff out.
And process through it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's paperwork and legal stuff. And right now it is situational. I can't do anything other than scan it and store it and put it in an e-file.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jillian, what about kitchens? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to organize a kitchen? I cannot imagine, other than your great grandma's frying pan that's been handed down generation to generation, that there is anything that is sentimental in a kitchen. And so shouldn't kitchens really be the easiest thing to declutter?
Well, it depends on whose kitchen it is.
Yeah, well, then there's...
I mean, you know, you have folks who have, if you were to use a loose label, foodies, people who do a lot of home cooking and preparation, who may have lots of different kinds of gadgets. My thinking about a kitchen is that if you are fortunate to have a pantry, I really do advocate that food is kind of stored all in one location. If you don't have a pantry, then you designate certain cabinets where we're only going to have food. Most of the trouble I observe when I go to work in a kitchen is that sometimes people will commingle food with dishes and glasses. So we do the sort of what any organizing project starts with, is that we kind of sort, and we want to have all the like things that are in one particular area. We want to have things that are, for example, if you cook a lot, you want your utensils and you want your pots and pans and storage dishes to be as close to your stove as possible, so that you try to organize things so that they're going to support the function that they serve. I am a great advocate of not having stuff on the counters. That if you have a generous kitchen, small appliances can be stored at the bottom of a pantry, you know, because some folks will say, oh, I'll store it in the basement, but then that becomes inconvenient, especially if to go up and downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, things tend not to go back to the home in the basement. But in terms of a kitchen, the advocate, and the other part I don't want to forget is the sort of a food clutter. You know, a lot of times when I work in a pantry, people have food that's from 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Expired. Expired. Expired.
Expired, right. That it's taking up, you know, space where you could have current food or what you actually mm-hmm. currently use. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in pantries, things like bins, because Tanisha made a really, really important point that the space is your boundary. You know, And that's when people get into trouble with clutter, is when we are not respectful. I'm going to use your words. I think they were very profound. When you're not respectful of your boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, trying to keep that brother off the sofa. I'm really trying for him. But, you know, Jillian, I'll tell both of you, as it relates to the kitchen, the best thing that I could do, because my kitchen is rectangular, it is not large, and I agree, mm-hmm. I want my granite countertops to remain clean and clear. Mm-hmm. Because, again, that... the clutter in the kitchen means clutter in the mind. And mm-hmm. but the best thing that I did, I bought a 4-shelf stainless steel rack. Mm-hmm. And it is, as you said, Jillian, it is directly across from the stove. Mm-hmm. And that way, because I am a foodie and I do love to cook, all I have to do, if I'm facing the stove and I want to grab something, all I have to do is do a 180 degree turn and I can mm-hmm. grab whatever it is. Mm-hmm. As well as there are some utensils, you know, particularly, you know, kind of the wooden utensils that are in an old ceramic baker's jar, and I can just mm-hmm. grab those as well. And that has served me so very, very well, because beforehand, as you said, whether it was the crock pot, whether it was the cast iron frying pan, whether it was the big container, you know, a lot of that stuff had to be stored out of harm's way, but I just had nowhere to put it, and you don't want to look for stuff. Now I know where everything mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. and I put it back, because again, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I don't do the clutter. Mm-hmm. You know, what is, and I wanted to ask this of Tanisha before we end the program. Tanisha, you have a clutter confession. What is your clutter confession?
My clutter confession?
That's right.
Well,
yeah, go ahead. We're all friends here.
Listen, yeah. I love mugs, and I had an obsession with a particular ceramic person that has all of the ceramics that you can get at these different, you know, these different stores, and I have a collection, right? And I have probably more than I need. However, I made space for my collection, right? Which is imperative, and which is something that some people do not do. So, you know, because it was important to me, I created a space for it to display so I can see it all. You know, but the confession lies in, I realized that I have too much and I'm not using them all, and they don't serve me, they don't give me joy like they used to. So I have started purging them, right? And this is the behavior, this is the routine, this is the lifestyle piece that professional organizers talk about. It's fine to have collections, make room for them. You're not really respecting the collection if it's in a box in the back of the, you know, the garage or wherever. And then mm-hmm. once your interest in that collection lessens, it's okay to bless somebody else with it. You don't have to hold on to it forever just because at one point, you know, this was your thing. So yeah. That's my confession.
Okay.
Thank you for letting me voice that.
I get it. You have mugs. Mine is crystal. Mm. I love fine crystal.
Yeah.
But the I guess the good thing about it is that purging that is not a problem because invariably I always break some.
Right.
So
it kind of solves itself.
It solves the problem. Jillian, I'll let you have a final word about organizing and decluttering.
As I said before, it's not a destination. It's a process. It's a lifelong process that gets changed by things that occur across the lifespan, by events that we anticipate, by ones that we don't anticipate. I think one of the most important things that I would like to share with folks is that you don't have to start at the exact right place. You don't have to start with the exact right space or project. The important thing is just to get started. And you start small so that you can feel success. If you get stuck, that's why we have this service as professional organizers. I oftentimes have clients who will tell me, you know, I'm really able to do this because you are here. If you weren't here, this was not going to happen. So it's also important to recognize, you know, when you are stuck and you've tried things that aren't working, that you sometimes it's really, really appropriate to just reach out and to get some support and help.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea and a great way to end this conversation. Jillian Carty-Roper and Tanisha Lyons-Porter, thank you both for talking to us and helping us get through this process.
Thank you.
It was lots of fun. Yeah. Thank you.
It was fun.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, January 20th, 2023. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bermonte Bryan, producer Candace Atkins-Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.